And you're back inside the cave this morning. Pat Hayes and John Cain with you. Glad you could join us. And as promised, we have Tom Crawford on the other end of our line this morning to talk a little bit of Michigan football. And Tom, we've had questions all season long about how good Michigan really is. I think we really found some pretty good answers over the weekend against Penn State.
Well, we certainly did. We talked about October 15th. You know, ask us on October 15th if Michigan's got a good football team or not, and they got a pretty good football team indeed. But that 41-17 smashing of Penn State was actually deceiving. I mean, that game should have been 55-3 if when you started going through the woulda, shouldas in this game. But an amazing victory, 563 total yards to 268. Think about that, and just an amazing two-tandem tailback situation Michigan has going on with Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards. 166 for Blake, 173 for Donovan, and that 67-yard touchdown run, the way he cut back was unbelievable.
And Penn State, as you said, just a couple of plays. They had the pick six, and then they had that long run by their running back that fooled everybody, took him right down inside.
Yeah, the quarterback. Sean Clifford. Yeah, the keeper.
And those were really the only two plays that were highlighted for Penn State.
Yeah, you know, two quirky plays, made it a game at halftime. Then they had the little chirping going on in the tunnel, which was an interesting saga between Michigan and Penn State. The tunnel's always fun. And then Michigan just dominated in the second half. I mean, Jim Harbaugh called it a statement game, called it a butt-kicking game. I mean, it was just everything you wanted, and gave Michigan instant credibility for the naysayers, and then also set up, with the bye week, an opportunity to pay back the rival Michigan State on October 29th.
Going into this game, I really thought it was going to be the offensive line that needed to really step up and show that they can get their running backs out in the open. And my gosh, just about every play there was some type of hole. And that offensive line was, I think they played their best game of the year.
I tell you what, it was right up there. This took me back, and you can relate to this, to the 70s when Michigan would get, 375 on the ground, maybe a 125 in the air. It was just, where the holes were gaping. And, when you saw Blake Corum blasting through there, Donovan Edwards as well, where they'd get to the second level and, there was no contact until they got to the second. And then you had the offensive lineman, like a Zach Zinner, already working on the linebacker instantly. I mean, it was an amazing articulation of that offensive line. And, Penn State has a good defense. I mean, like we said going into this game, Pat, I mean, Penn State's a good team all around, not a great team all around. They're certainly not a great team defensively after what Michigan did with them. But I was just baffled in a good way, as you were too, sitting next to me, of these holes that were just constantly happening for Michigan. And kudos to that O-line. They were just absolutely wonderful.
Tom, I'm thinking that the Michigan coaching staff, they just saw something with Penn State coming into this game that they knew that they could take advantage of and do it consistently. I mean, it's like the old saying, just keep running it until they stop it, and they never could.
Yeah, it's like Woody Hayes says, three things can happen when you throw the ball, and two of them are bad. So running's a little safer, indeed. And everybody says, oh, now they got to get JJ, to throw the ball. Michigan fans are always not happy. And he threw for 145. But I think what helps that running game, which I think schematically what Michigan's approach to this was, is that he threatens that second level, that linebacker level, with his feet and that read pass option. So is he gonna keep it, or is he gonna give it to Corum or Edwards? That's a split second decision that a linebacker has to make, and I think that comes into play. But you're right. They knew that they were going to be able to run the ball on Penn State. They knew it at halftime. They weren't Michigan. You know, when we looked in the, or when we talked to the players in post game, including Jim Harbaugh, there was not any anxiety of only being up what, 2 points, 16-14, at the halfway point, because they knew how much they were moving the ball and dominating, and they knew that two quirky plays kept Penn State in the game. I mean, Penn State had one first down in the first half. I mean, it was crazy, absolutely crazy. And those two freshman running backs, Singleton and Allen for Penn State, they ended up with 12 carries, combined 35 yards. And these guys have been dominating all year.
And so, I mean, we couldn't get a better setup for the season to come in at this point undefeated off the Penn State game into a bye, and then Michigan State coming up in a couple of weeks. I mean, it's just the season is just setting up perfectly for the Wolverines so far.
You know, you're right, and you know, we're all concerned about the soft schedule, and you know, Michigan, you know, going into this game, they were the 96th ranked schedule in the country, but this game beating Penn State, all of a sudden it pushed them up to the 73rd toughest schedule out of the 130-odd teams that are in Division One. So, and as they play more credible opponents in the Big Ten, you got Illinois, who's going to be ranked, Michigan State, and I mean, you got to take Michigan State seriously, because of the way they play Michigan every year, and then Nebraska is in a nothing to lose kind of mode as well. So there's a lot of potholes, including a trip to Rutgers in between on November 5th. So, but this one, I think, is giving Michigan a lot of confidence, and I think it's going to give J.J. McCarthy a lot of confidence. And I've never seen a more mature sophomore in terms of being grounded, of being a team guy, of being passionate, of just giving his teammates all the credit than J.J. McCarthy. He's a unique young man, and I think he's going to be, like I said, next year I think he'll be going to New York for the Heisman ceremony.
Well, of course, at the post-game press conference, he made some comments about the Michigan State game and that he wants Paul back.
Yeah. And, you know, Michigan, you know, I'm going to give you a little story. John Falk could tell you this. Like when Michigan beat Michigan State 8 years in a row back in the, from 1970 to 70, 1977 to 1977, and 1970 to 77, they went 8 years in a row. That was 8 seasons in a row, okay? They had that Paul Bunyan stuffed in a storage closet. It was not that big of a deal. But what happened is when Mark D'Antonio came to Michigan State and they started beating Michigan, they coveted Paul Bunyan. They would parade around the outside of the field to the student body when they beat Michigan, and even in Ann Arbor as well, carrying that Paul Bunyan around. And Michigan's picked up on that. So Michigan covets Paul Bunyan because of Michigan State and because of the way they Michigan State puts it in their face. They want this game. I've never seen a team focus post-game, right after the game, where you had players, and even Jim Harbaugh talking about the Blake Corum comment in the tone, say, hey, Blake, great game. He said, hey, it's on to Michigan State. He's already thinking about Michigan State, and there's a bye week in between. Michigan is going to be ready like they've never been before. I'm not promising a win, but if they lose to Michigan State, it's not because they're not focused on this game or mentally prepared for this game.
Hey, yeah, they still have a bad taste in their mouth after the last couple of years. So, anyway, looking at the top 25, your thoughts about Tennessee jumping over Michigan into third place, Michigan in fourth. I know you don't really care about the AP poll and all that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, it's always fun. It creates fan interest, and we've talked about this a number of times. You know, let's wait till mid-October. Well, it's mid-October, so you might as well line them up and see who's ranked two. But it's the Tuesday following the Michigan State game that, you know, then they have the first college football playoff standings. Now, that's the one that really matters. So that one will get my attention. But when you look at Michigan's schedule, Pat and John, moving forward, they don't have. They are totally in control of their destiny. I mean, they just keep winning. They're gonna, you know, they win out. They're gonna be, if they beat Ohio State and win the Big Ten title, they're gonna be the number one seed, because Michigan and Ohio State I think are two of the best teams in the country. I'm saying, I mean, when I watched, when I got home and watched Tennessee and Alabama, they are not as fit. This is not a vintage Alabama team by any stretch. And Tennessee is, albeit they got a great quarterback, very talented, good running back, and a great environment down there at Neyland Stadium. But they're not as physical as Michigan nor Ohio State. So I think, I think Big Ten, maybe this is the finally of the year that they win a national title since, 2014 with Ohio State. And there's a lot of drought in between. So I don't worry about the rankings, but, it'll put Tennessee there. Michigan will take care of business. They have a schedule to do it.
What? Go ahead, Tom.
I don't see, a lot of difference in the top four. The nice thing, I guess, about it is the fact that they're going to have to play one another. Tennessee's going to have to play Georgia. Michigan's going to have to play Ohio State.
Yep.
So it's all going to work out in the end. And
but you know what? You bring up an interesting point, though, about those SEC teams playing each other. I mean, technically, and you could have 3 1-loss teams in the SEC because you could get Tennessee losing to Alabama beating Georgia. They all could be having 1 loss, and then it's really going to get clunky, especially if Michigan would lose to Ohio State. I mean, so where are they with a 1-loss versus those SEC teams? So that's when it could get complicated. But you can uncomplicate things by just running the table. I know that's easier said than done, but I really think Michigan has more than a puncher's chance of beating Ohio State in Columbus.
Well, you look at the Big Ten West, as we've talked before, it looks like Illinois is kind of the team to beat over there, along with Purdue, both with 3-1 conference records. Illinois 6-1 overall, Purdue 5-2. Illinois starting to scare me a little bit.
Yeah, why? Because Brett Bielema hired a good DC, a good D coordinator, and they have a good running game. They got a really good running back in Chase Brown, a solid quarterback, and then you have and just a physical team in Illinois. And so yeah, they're going to be tough, and they're coming to Ann Arbor. Thank God it's going to be in Ann Arbor versus Champaign. So, but I like the fact that they're winning. And so it's basically, guys, a two-team race on both sides of the. It's a two-team race in the East and two-team race in the West with Purdue and Illinois. And Purdue seems to be one of those teams who kind of just plays the level, makes things exciting no matter who they're playing. But I think Illinois is the better of those two.
All right, let's change subjects here for just a second. Michigan basketball. They had their media day this past week. Tom, you were there. Tell us your impressions. I know you interviewed a lot of players at that day.
Yeah, it was great. I love Michigan media day because you get so much full access. I got basically 6 one-on-one interviews, and I think there's the thing about this team though, guys. There's 13 scholarship kids on the team. 9 of them have never played basketball at Michigan, and as one was redshirt coming up. It's great. And then you got the transfers, Jalen Llewellyn, the kid out of Princeton. I'm really impressed with him. And then Joey Baker, this transfer from Duke, who's a shooter, I think is really going to help the team. Jed Howard is kind of like a Glenn Rice type. I'm not trying to go overly embellish here. Terrence Williams looks really muscular. I like this team, guys. I'm not trying to get ahead of football, but I like this basketball team because they address 2 issues in the offseason. Defense and perimeter shooting, and those are the things that were challenging them last year.
All right, Tom, we are out of time here on Inside the Cave. Again, we thank you for joining us. And, of course, people can check you out on your podcast. Tell us where they can find you.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at BlueBellyTom. Also, you can find me at Tom's Take Community on Facebook, on my community page, and just reach out and connect with me on Facebook, Tom Crawford, and glad to share. A lot of Michigan fans out there, and they are a lot of passionate Michigan fans right now, all excited about this football team. Appreciate you having me on today.
All right, and next Tuesday, it'll be Michigan State Week. Should be a great week to talk about both of these teams, and we'll talk about that next week with you, Tom.
All right, look forward to it, guys.
All right, Tom Crawford, our guest this morning here on Inside the Cave. We'll be back with more after these. You're Inside the Cave.